1.
Part 1.
You will hear a woman asking for information over the phone. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Good afternoon. Plainfield Community Centre.
Yes, hi. I'm new in town, and I was curious about the services the community centre has to offer.
We offer a variety of recreational activities. What were you interested in particular?
Well, everything, I guess. Okay, let's start with kids. I have a teenage son. What activities do you have for teens?
Right now, during the school year, we have tutoring sessions for children and teens in all subjects.
That would be good. He needs help with algebra.
We can certainly help with that. Just have him come by any Wednesday or Saturday afternoon. That's when the tutoring sessions are scheduled.
Fantastic! What about sports? Do you have sports activities for teens?
We have tennis lessons on Sunday mornings for teens and Sunday afternoon for adults.
I don't think my son would like that, but my husband might. For myself, I'd be more interested in yoga. Do you offer yoga classes?
We do. Our yoga classes take place on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. We divide it up into several groups, so there's one class for younger children, one for teens, and one for adults.
Really? I doubt my husband and son would be interested, but I'd like to sign up for yoga. I also like reading. Do you have any book clubs?
We have one just about to start. The first meeting will be next Friday morning. It will focus on early 20th century novels.
Too bad it's Friday morning. I think my son would enjoy it, but of course he's in school at that time.
Well, actually, that book club is for adults only. We may start one up for teens next summer, but we have nothing for that age group right now.
Oh, well, I suppose he has enough to keep him busy for now. Now, what about fees? Do these classes and activities cost anything?
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10.
There's a small charge for non-members for each class. However, they're all free to members. Would you be interested in becoming a member?
How much does the membership cost?
Not much at all. The yearly fee is $75 for individuals and $225 for families.
What do I get with the membership?
You get free access to all classes and activities. And you can use our facilities, like the tennis court, the exercise room and the meeting room.
It's not a bad deal, really. Could you tell me exactly where the centre is located?
It's at 107 Elliott Street.
Is that Elliott with two L's or one L?
One L. E-L-I-O-T. It's right downtown.
I think I know where it is. Do you have free parking?
Yes. You can park just across the street. There's a garage there.
That sounds easy enough. Maybe I'll come in one day next week and sign up for some classes.
That would be fine. But don't come on Monday, because we're closed that day. We're open Tuesday through Sunday.
Oh, thanks for telling me. Maybe I'll stop in on Tuesday then. Can I pay for the classes with a personal check?
We accept checks and credit cards.
Okay. Thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear an extract from a talk about the Scottish Highlands.
First, you have 30 seconds to look at questions 11 to 18.
Today I have with me Moira McKenzie, the author of several books in a well-known series of travel guides, and she'll be talking about what is probably the most fascinating wildlife area in Europe, the Scottish Highlands. Moira.
Yes, that's right. And it's a wonderful place to visit with lots to do in an area that makes up over half of Scotland. Including the 790 islands that lie scattered around the coast, it covers 39,000 square kilometres. Getting there is easy. From here in Glasgow, a good starting point is Fort William on the west coast, with regular bus and rail services linking the two. I'd recommend the train, which takes 4 hours to get there. Alternatively, you can take the Highland Line, which takes the more easterly route up to Inverness. That, in fact, is a bit quicker, taking around 3.5 hours to cover the 280 kilometres from here. There are also two main options by road. You can take either the A9 up through Stirling and Perth and then on to Inverness, or else on the west there's the A82, which runs up to Fort William and then, if you want, on to Inverness. Now, a lot of people associate the Highlands with bitterly cold weather, but in fact the region has a generally mild climate as a result of being surrounded on three sides by sea, particularly the warm waters of the Atlantic. At sea level in the west, for instance, the temperature ranges on average from a minimum of 1 degree centigrade in January up to 18 in July, and you can actually see palm trees growing there. Obviously, though, the temperatures will be lower inland and on higher ground. You can expect it to rain a lot too, particularly in the west, where annually as much as 2,000 millimetres regularly falls, though this helps account for the rich variety of vegetation and wildlife. When you get there, you'll find there are plenty of reasonably priced places to stay. In Fort William, for instance, you can find a room for the night in a small hotel or a bed and breakfast for just £25, or for £28 to £30 in Inverness. It's probably a good idea to book ahead, though, especially in the summer months. With all the leisure, sports and cultural activities on offer, the towns are becoming increasingly popular with visitors. For example, accommodation in Inverness won't be at all easy to find this year around the 23rd of July, as that's when the local Highland Games will take place. So, if your aim is to see the countryside, it may be best to stay in a small village.
Now you have some time to look at questions 19 and 20.
As I mentioned, there's a huge range of wildlife in the Highlands, but for those visiting the area, there are some basic ground rules that are essential if we are to protect it. Firstly, you should make every effort not to disturb birds and animals, and one way of doing this is to blend in with your surroundings. For instance, by avoiding brightly coloured garments, such as orange anoraks. To see wildlife clearly, it's best to use binoculars, keeping your distance. This is particularly important during the breeding season. Wherever possible, use a hide so that they are less likely to detect your presence. Surprising though it may seem, visitors are advised to use their cars where no purpose-built hides are available, as people are apparently less likely to startle animals if they stay inside their vehicles. You may even find that creatures come up close to where you're parked, in which case, wait until they've gone before you move off. It should really go without saying that it's essential to be as quiet as possible, though sadly, some people need reminding of this. Oh, and one other thing. Wild animals and pets don't mix. So please, leave your dog at home, or at least somewhere he or she can't chase the wildlife or damage their habitat.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear an extract from a talk about the congestion charging scheme.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25.
For more practical details, I'll pass you over to John Ward from the London Tourist Agency.
Thanks. So, that was a brief introduction to the congestion charging scheme. But if you're actually going to be driving your car in London on weekdays, there are a few more details you will need to know. Firstly, you don't need to worry about paying all the time. The charge applies between 7 in the morning and 6:30 in the evening, Monday to Friday. You'll be pleased to hear, however, that because the scheme is intended to reduce traffic during busy working hours, evenings and weekends are free. If you enter the zone during the charging times, you'll be eligible to pay the standard charge of £8, which you can pay until 10 o'clock on that day. After 10 o'clock, this charge rises to £10. But be warned, if you fail to pay before midnight, you will have to pay an automatic penalty charge. In other words, there's no escape. Let's move on to paying. The charge, as I've said, is £8 a day, and the authorities have set up a number of systems to make it easy for you to pay, or rather to ensure that nobody has a good excuse for not paying. So, using your credit card, you can pay by phone, by text message, or on the internet. The other option is to go to one of the 200 pay points inside the zone, or the 9,500 pay points elsewhere in the country. If you know you're going to be driving in and out of London on a regular basis, you can buy weekly, monthly or annual passes, rather like a railway season ticket.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30.
OK, on to the area itself. The congestion charging zone is everywhere inside London's inner ring road. For those of you not familiar with London's road system, this includes the City of London, that's the main financial district, and the West End, the commercial and entertainment centre. If you're still not sure, there are very clear signs on all roads which indicate when you are entering the area. These are round and have a white letter C on a red background. The scheme is policed by cameras which photograph all cars entering the area and send them to a computer which can recognise all British and European car registration plates. If you pay the £8 charge, you'll find London a little easier to drive round than it was before the charge was introduced. But if it's all too much trouble and you decide to leave your car at home, then you are left with public transport. That's trains, buses, taxis, or the underground. Some of the money from the congestion charging scheme is being used to upgrade public transport, so you should see improvements there. And because of reductions in the number of private vehicles on London's roads brought about by congestion charging, buses and taxis are providing a quicker, more efficient service than they did in the past. OK, I've covered the main details that you need to know.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four.
You will hear a talk on bullying in the workplace given by a university lecturer to a group of students.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Mervyn Forrest, and I specialize in management techniques and training. I've been invited here today to talk to you about the cost to the economy of bad management. And what I would like to dwell on first is an area that has recently been exercising everyone, and that is coercion in the workplace, or, to put it more simply, bullying. It has been estimated that bullying at work costs the British economy up to £4 billion a year in lost working time and in legal fees. And with the problem apparently on the increase, it is time that managers took on board what is happening. I would like to think that what is perceived as bullying is nothing more than lack of experience, insecurity, or lack of awareness on the part of managers, and not a conscious effort to attack someone. But that is perhaps a case of my being naive or over-hopeful. Before we break up into groups to look at the first task on the handout you've got, I'd like to give you a start with some of the main bullying methods that have been identified so far. Basically, what I'm going to do here is to give you examples of one or two points. Can you all read the OHP clearly? Yes? Right, off we go. The first item on the list is giving people tasks which managers themselves cannot do and which are therefore impossible to achieve. This is, in fact, a very common strategy used by managers to manage their subordinates. It gives certain people a false sense of security as they watch others failing while they try to achieve the goals set. Another simple bullying technique is constantly moving the goalposts, especially when one's employees are in the middle of a task. This is not bad management, it is just plain stupid. All targets and goals set should be easily achieved within a realistic timescale. Sending memos to someone else criticizing the performance of a task where the individual has no way of replying is another common technique, especially when the manager concerned does not reply or makes it impossible for subordinates to contact him or her by not answering the telephone or not replying to emails. This is not the style of a sound manager, but rather the antics of someone with emotional problems. If you behave like that, don't expect your staff to respect you. And now, the technological bully. It is interesting how all tools designed to help can be turned into dangerous weapons. The urgent email bully is fast becoming a problem in the office. Employees turn on their computers to be faced with a string of badly worded emails, making instant and often unrealistic demands, which reveal the hysteria mode of management. Have you ever felt a sense of dread before looking at your email, even your personal messages? All companies should develop a company strategy whereby there is an email code of practice, with offensive messages being forwarded to a designated person for appropriate action. I would now like you to break up into groups and brainstorm other bullying techniques which you think you may have experienced, and perhaps, if you're honest, which you have been party to. I can think of at least 9 more bullying strategies. I would also like you to consider ways in which you think that each of the techniques on your list can be countered. Is everyone clear as to what the task is? Yes? Okay. You've got 20 minutes to do this.
That is the end of